Hello and welcome to another podcast inspired by the Transmission in Motion seminar series organized by Utrecht University. My name is Justyna Jakubiec and I am part of the Research Master Media, Art and Performance Studies at Utrecht University. I have just finished my first year of the program and looking forward very much to the second one. Just as a very brief note, my research is inspired by my interest in the connection between aesthetic experiences and contemporary technology, how the present-day technology influences the ways how we enjoy art of all kinds, as well as how our psychology is influenced by this connection. Today, I will have a pleasure to talk with Suzanne Tunka, whose work seems to fit perfectly the idea of how our present-day aesthetic and technological lives influence the ways in which we make sense of the world. Hello, Susan. I am very happy and very grateful for having you here.
Thank you very much, Justyna. Lovely. Thank you very much for your invitation. I'm happy to speak to you as well.
Yes, I am very happy to speak to you as well. And now, perhaps as a quick introduction of our guest, of course, Susan is based in theater dance at the Academy of Arts in Arnhem, as well as the University of Amsterdam. She has earned her experiences as a dancer, choreographer, and choreographic assistant, both in the Netherlands as well as abroad. Her work has inspired her to start working with possible connection between the dancing body and interacting technology, which has also inspired her to start researching new ways of notating and documenting dance. Right now, since 2016, Susan performs the function of a dance researcher at ICK Amsterdam. And also adding to that, she is a PhD candidate at PhD Arts at Leiden University. Susan, did I forget anything?
I think you forgot that I'm also working at Code Arts, University of the Arts. I'm teaching artistic research for dance students for the first to the third years. So maybe the one affiliation you mentioned. I'm affiliated with ArtTest, but that's where I did the education indeed in 1994 to 1997. So yes, that's where I did my studies in Arnhem. So now I'm next to working as a researcher and the head of the academy at ICK Amsterdam and doing my PhD at Leiden University. I also teach and coach young dancers in art, developing their own artistic research with their dancing body and the research instrument.
All right. Yes. So my introduction was very, very brief indeed, but I see that you're doing a lot, Susan. And also I'm very, very happy to have you here and to share our thoughts together. Mm-hmm. So to start, of course, as our present-day reality still continues to be very much influenced by the pandemic, various activities are still hosted online, which also applies to our conversation that we are having right now. And part of Susan's work is also influenced by it, and I would like to talk a bit about that. I was inspired by one project based at ICK, namely the Double Skin, Double Mind Workshop Initiative, which is also offered online as well. Susan, I know that you're also involved in this project. So how would you feel about having a conversation about it?
This is fine for me. Let's do it.
All right. So let's just do it then. I think it would be useful to begin with some introductory notes. Double Skin, Double Mind was created as a dance method in 1997 by Emil Greco, working as a choreographer and a dancer, and Peter Scholte, working both as a director as well as a choreographer. For our listeners, it is good to know that you, Susan, have also an experience, of course, of working with Greco and Scholte, earned while working at ICK Amsterdam. But to go back to the method itself, Double Skin, Double Mind was created for the 1998 International Dance Festival in Vienna. And since its creation, It has been based on raising awareness of and discovering the sensitivity of one's own body through the basic principles of breathing, jumping, expanding, and reducing. And Susan, if that's all right, we will, of course, return to this basic principles later on when our discussion goes deeper. Just to add, as Greco says, the method allows for preparing the body for dance by letting one's thinking and imagination thrive, we can say. And as I said, we will talk more about how double skin, double mind functions in practice later. But for now, I think we should know that it has, since its creation, been offered in various training courses and workshops, both for professionals as well as amateurs. Am I right, Susan? It's
yes.
It's in this context, okay. And in 2008, it has also been turned into an interactive installation. And now I would like us to move to discussing this very interactive installation. But first, Susan, do you have anything to add to that?
Not necessarily. Maybe we just finalized a first pilot for a teacher training program where the method is being transmitted to aspirant teachers outside of the company. So until now, teachers of double skin, double mind method were only former dancers of the company. And then already we initiated a teacher training for them. So just to intensify, to maintain the quality standards. But then also we did a first pilot this year with four working sessions. Just this week we did almost the last module. Mm-hmm. So these are professional dancers who want to learn to teach the method. And so that's a new aspect to it. So it's being disengaged from the aesthetic paradigm of working in the company to also have its own life outside of the company. So that's, I think, an interesting step that has been made.
All right. So it's still expanding with regard to possible users and possible uses. It's still expanding since 2008. And with this, you mean the interactive installation. Am I right?
No, so the interactive installation, this is a result of, at ICK, there has been a documentation research, dance notation and dance annotation and documentation, transmission of knowledge, but also generation of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And this has started in 2005. That was a project called Capturing Intention. It was initiated by Berta Bermudez, who was also a dancer in the company. So that was a notation research initiated by her. Mm-hmm. And the first object of, the first case study was double skin, double mind. So from there was developed a glossary, like a first vocabulary that would help to name certain principles, which would then describe the movement intention. So it's a choreographic language that does not work on a form-based idea, but with that where the form is a consequence of the intention. Mm-hmm. So that it requires also a different way of notating. So there has been, because there's no universal language to notate dance, I mean, there have been attempts to create universal languages for notating, for example, in classical ballet, or there has been 20th century Laban movement analysis. So there are ways that claim to be universal, but because choreography is constantly evolving and reinvents the coordinates of its laws of language. Mm-hmm. Also, the notation systems need to be reinvented. So that was then an in-depth research into what kind of notation would fit this choreographic proposal, this language. And they started with a movement practice. So there are different layers of a movement dance notation research. So in this case, the first layer was to try to notate or document just the movement practice, which is the foundation for the choreographic work. And that is double skin, double mind. So not yet even on the choreographic level, just the movement practice. And then the next step, so that was the first research between 2005 and 2007 on the capturing intention. And the next step was between 2008 and 2010 was called Inside Movement Knowledge. And part of this research was then to try to implement the notation research on double skin, double mind, using other media also in, and to implement it in other fields, so in education or, so the double skin, double mind installation, interactive installation was a creative proposal for a way to notate dance using interactive technology. So you had a virtual, you could participate in a virtual workshop with Emilio Greco, and you had also, they were working a lot on creating feedback situations. So with audio and visual feedback to sort of mimic or imitate the real life situation in the studio.
All right. Yes, that's, I think that's the very last bit that you were just discussing. That's what I was focusing on as well, as having a look at the double skin, double mind as a possibility for trying to look at new ways of notating dance, because I suppose that with contemporary dance especially, it's getting more and more complicated just to develop a language. I suppose that's that's even impossible, right? So just trying to look for ways to understand dance in a better way. And that's how I was also having a look at the double skin, double mind interactive installation as well. And also when I was having a look at this installation, I focused on one chapter that can be found in the book Transmission in Motion, The Technologizing of Dance, which is edited by Micah Blaker. The chapter is written by Bertha Bermudez Pasquale. And it also focuses on how the double skin, double mind interactive installation functions. So of course you were right now briefly summarizing it, how it works like, but just to let our listeners know, it provides a possibility for familiarizing for the panel participants with artistic ideas and practices that were developed by the company of Emil Greco and Peter Scholten. And most importantly though, the installation provides a virtual version of a workshop. Also speaking as about the interactive installation, of course. And so briefly speaking, and also as I was made more familiarized about this with the help of the chapter, the installation is built with an aluminum frame construction with one projection screen, four sound speakers and one camera that tracks the movements of the participants. And Susan, could you perhaps talk us briefly through how the installation functions when participants become part of it, how they come in contact with these different technologies that are present there and what happens between them?
Yeah, so you enter the installation. So it's an enclosed space, more or less. So you see in front of you a big screen where there's a life-sized projection of Emilio Greco. And then you have on the left in front of you, there's on the left top corner, there's a video screen with talking heads. Then you have first from Peter Seescholten, an introduction about the workshop. And then there are different chapters, and there are also, you know, for different stages. So there's, they developed one for everybody. So one sequence of participating in the workshop duration about 20 minutes, everybody can join. And another is more for professionals. And then there's also a play mode and a create mode. So that is was more for the, so there's a basic level and there's a professional level. And within each level, there are different modes. And then let's say if you do the basic mode, so for everyone, you enter it and you start, the installation should get going. And then you see, you hear the introduction about what this workshop is about, like to find freedom in the body and to, you know, to use the breath and the jumping to get to liberate the body of habits, of constrictions, to create a new vulnerability. So the basic, you know, the basic idea behind it. And then you have per workshop segment. So it's breathing, jumping, expanding, reducing, you have, and then you enter the breathing, and then there's a short description by Emil verbally, So you, for example, yeah, you visualize a thin line that passes through your spine, and you reach, you extend, you grow in the length in that line with the breathing. So it's a physical action accompanied through verbal intentional description. And then you are in the installation and you follow, you have both the visual, the virtual version of Emil Greco, and at the same time you had like some audio input. And then there is a representation of your body, also like more pixelated. So it's already an old installation. So it's not new technology. It's already 10 years old. But at that time it was a very new.
Yes, of course.
And they worked with a gesture follower. So that was developed by Frédéric Bevilacqua at IRCAM Paris. So they developed a software that would be able to follow the gestures. And the main part of the research was, of course, to quantify qualitative data. So movement qualities, not formal aspects of movement, but movement qualities, which are related to intentions that needed to be translated into a technological, into an algorithm that could read and represent this movement. So then you would see your representation both in the screen, so next to the virtual image of Emil, and you have feedback in terms of sound. So when you would match, when your movement quality would match with a prescribed set of data as to how the movement should be. So that was an attempt to fix this teacher-student situation. So that is really also a learning experience. So then you would get the sound. So then a sound would come. So if it wouldn't match the quality, then there's silence. But like that was the feedback, both the sound and each sound relative to each component, and also some visual, some icons that would represent also the type of movement quality.
All right. So you mean that the quality of the movement was very much connected to the sensory information that was created as a result. So different sensory information, as I understand it correctly, was created as one participant was taking part in this installation with the help of the intersection of dancing and moving body and technology. So this sensory information can be understood as a feedback that was provided by the technology for the participants, right? So this feedback was created in order for them to become more aware of their own bodily movements and just to make their movements as they should be looking like, according to the technology, of course, but just to make them more aware of how they are moving or how they should be moving. So do I understand it correctly?
Yeah, this of course always be tricky. This should be, but you try to approximate a certain quality, also not how it looked like, but it's really to find that same quality, and that quality is not determined by the technology in the first place, but of course by Emil Greco and the language. So that is first, and then there is this experiment to how can technology capture these qualities, and then second, can it also be transmitted through technology? But the parameters are not defined by the technology, only the parameters for the feedback, they attempted to be defined by technology. But the first is, of course, the language itself.
So anyways,
the situation in the studio is still like primarily, so it's body to body. So it's the technology is still far, 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 far away from being able to catch up with that technology of two human bodies in the. But that was the research, right? So still it's captured. Course. Yeah.
So there is still a lot to do, but of course there was something to begin with. And also, you were talking at the very beginning of our conversation, you were talking about the notion of notating. Talking about the connection between the dancing body, technology and sensory information that gave the beginning to the double skin and double mind that made it possible to be created. So I was wondering, perhaps.
Sorry, Justina. Just one note. So the technology did not make it possible that double skin, double mind was created.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how I understood you articulate.
All so right.
The technology was an attempt to support a way to notate double skin, double mind, but the workshop. The language is completely independent from the technology.
Okay.
So just to nuance that thought there, because it
all right.
You understand?
It's a very, very nuanced connection. So technology is there just as a supporter, just as a help. It does not make the whole interactive creation possible. It is just there to help. Yeah.
Yeah, to find a way to notate it, to make exactly. it endure through time because of its ephemerality. But also technology has comparable, difficulties because the installation completely outdated already 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
10 years, so of course the hope was to, but it's still working. So that was an attempt to make a supportive device to maybe find ways to preserve it through time,
mm-hmm.
but it's absolutely not any condition for the language itself to exist or
right.
to be created. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And right now I was wondering, perhaps we were already talking about the notion of notating dance. So could you perhaps maybe elaborate a little bit on that? What do you mean with notating dance? Is it how does it look like? Is it difficult? What does it imply with itself?
Yeah, of course, this is it's a very, very, very broad topic. And I'm also not a specialist in that sense. So I'm my expertise lies, mainly in the choreographic language of Greco and Scholten. And mm-hmm. also later I opened up. So what we developed in the notation, annotation, documentation research, we opened up also to other choreographic practices.
Mm-hmm.
But, notation itself, it's gigantic. So it may be just for, so you have a text, an alphabet is already the first notation of the sound R. So, right? So the letter R is the first notation of symbolic representation. Of the sound.
The sound, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, then you have all this philosophy of language. And so there's this a huge field of research between the what is chosen as a representation and what lies behind that representation, right?
Yeah.
So, and then you have music notation, so everybody mm-hmm. knows that. So that's always an easy analogy. So the Western music, so you have the notes and you have the five rows. And you have the points in the five rows and above and below,
mm-hmm.
and the bass and the and that's a music notation. Everybody knows that's a universal way to notate a music, mm-hmm. but it's tones, right? So it's pitch, like your height and also qualities and so. But also, people like Ligeti, or they invented new ways to score because their way of thinking music was not compatible
exactly, not
anymore
really.
With this. Yeah,
not so really that's matching. That's.
Yeah, it was not matching. So you see that in the analogy with music.
Okay.
Yeah, and then dance, of course, you might imagine it's much more complex because you have the human body, you have time, you have space.
Exactly. So I suppose what becomes difficult to deal with is what you pay attention to when you notate,
exactly.
right? Do you pay attention to bodily movements or... the feeling of bodily pressure or the feeling of how the body moves within a specific space or how fast the body is moving. I think there are very many aspects that can be paid, that the attention can be paid to, right?
Exactly. So that's already a way of defining how to look at something because it's very multi-layered. So what you choose, it's like also scientists, no? They have an amazing amount of data, and they have to choose how to sieve through the data. What mm-hmm. are the what are the points of entry that will allow them to gain knowledge? So it's the same with the notation research. So you have this immense data. So it's compressed. It's time, space, speed, you know, dynamics, language, you know, rhythm, emotion, intention. You know, there's so many parameters: effort, weight. So Laban movement analysis. You know, space, mm-hmm. effort. You know, that is categories that define how you look at dance. And ideally, each choreographer redefines this. Mm-hmm. So you look at something else. So for Emil Peter, it was very clear. It's not formal. So it's not the form that counts. Mm-hmm. So it's more or less, so how to notate, how to capture the what is behind the form. So what goes on the inside, what is before the form.
Right.
So what to focus on that. So that is relative to what you choose to emphasize within your choreographic language. Relative to that, you would theoretically need to develop a notation system. But of course, usually the production circuit of dance it's very, very slow. Like sometimes if you ask somebody who's a notator, you know, for 3 minutes of dance, you need at least, I guess, one day of work to just notate three, maybe 2 minutes of dance, you know, in a specific system, because it's so complex. So no, it's very rare that dance companies have a notator who keeps up. So what often is used is the video camera. Mm-hmm. It's just video.
Exactly. Or motion capture or something like this. So
motion capture, exactly. Yeah.
So, of course, with the act of notating, something will be limited, right? Something has to be excluded for something to be included. So that also...
Yeah, it's a reduction.
Exactly. Yeah. It also made me think, because dance is a very, very fleeting practice, isn't it? It is very much based in the here and now, in being a specific moment, in a specific time and place. It is a life thing, of course. So I was wondering, do you think that notating or documenting dance changes it, or does it change some of its elusiveness, the quality of being here and now?
No, it doesn't change that, I think.
Not at
all. I think if you, as a choreographer, engage in reflecting on how to notate mm-hmm. your dance, you are, of course, becoming more conscious about what are the main coordinates. So it is a knowledge generation practice. Mm-hmm. So you can also choose to, you know, just, first of all, how can I say it? Like, we encourage, for example, young choreographers to do reflect on how would you define the basic coordinates of your language. Because when you start to invent or think about notating, you have to find ways to pinpoint the essence of what is your work. So mm-hmm. it can be for yourself, it can make something more aware, which was more semi-aware, or maybe often on a semi-subconscious level. Mm-hmm. So there's a level of analysis which can be disturbing. Mm-hmm. So if you start to become too analytical about your choreographic language, it can be disturbing to the creative flow. But it depends, really. So yes and no, it doesn't change the fleeting nature. It dance, so it dance is dance, and you know, but it's always will disappear. So exactly. It's always only in the now moment. But also in relation to the, you know, you were referencing in your questions, what was it you want to hint to Peggy Phelan?
Yes, as well. It was Peggy Phelan, because Peggy Phelan was, in fact, she was writing about the liveness of theater performance. So, of course, she wasn't really talking about dance, but about theater performances. And for her, theater performances cannot really be recorded in a way, so they cannot be documented, because as a result they can lose their elusiveness, their fact of being here and now, their quality of being here and now. And that also what inspired me, because we were having a conversation sometime before and we were discussing about this, and this also made me think whether the act of notating and documenting dance could be understood as a little bit degrading or negative for the elusive aspect of dance. But it's very interesting to hear you that it also depends on what specifically a notator pays attention to. So whenever something becomes a little bit too analytical, it can move a little bit outside the aesthetic and creative aspect of dance or any aesthetic experiences, right?
Yeah, it's a very tricky domain. So that's why it's such a rich field of research. Mm-hmm. So you have the counter. ICK has invested a lot in mm-hmm. this research, but it's part of the aesthetic paradigm to be very, very in a constant mode of search of mm-hmm. not knowing, to allow that not knowing. So that doesn't mean if we do dance notation research that we know everything about this language. It's more we don't know anything about it and we keep asking.
Exactly.
We keep asking if, and we keep asking what is the essence, and we still don't know.
So perhaps it's not the point to know everything, but just to keep asking. And that's the thing, just to say very, very simply, just to keep the ball rolling, right? Just to be creative all the time and be inquisitive about the process.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you can also work with poetic images or metaphors. Or so it doesn't necessarily, so how to analyze is an art in itself, and sometimes it's helpful to have somebody outside, so not the choreographer, him or herself, but somebody else who really focuses only on that. And the whole idea for us was, of course, like everybody's using video, but mm-hmm. then you only have the visual image, and the whole idea of capturing intention is that what mm-hmm. you see is just a consequence of something of a much deeper importance, which lies on the inner, which is related to the inner space.
Mm-hmm. So just one specific part, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, so that's not enough. So we would say a video registration is not sufficient. Also no motion capture is also not sufficient. Or although we realize we did, what Motion Bank does, or, with these different cameras, and you have a stick figure, and you can see, 3D representation of a stick figure in space, and you can retrace exactly how the bones related to this space.
Mm-hmm.
And you can infer just from the movement of the lines of the bones, you can infer some kind of intentionality, even without giving any words about the inner space. But still, the main argument is, so we are using words, but mm-hmm. also metaphors, poetic images to describe certain landscapes that are at the origin of specific movement qualities. But that's then within a very specific choreographic paradigm. So somebody like a Lucinda Child, or if it's all count based, and of William Forsythe is more with forms and lines and deconstructing mm-hmm. ballet language. So it's really a different story.
All right.
And the notation itself can also become an artwork itself, because it's already a choice for what do you look and how do you look.
Exactly.
Then already it's, and that can be a tool for reflection for the choreographer as well. So that's a bit how we use it, really, as a way to generate knowledge about dance. So this whole idea to research how to notate is already a generative act of knowledge creation, let's say.
Mm-hmm. So it's still, that's how I also understand it, on the basis of what you're saying. So notating is also a way of enabling a participant or a notator as well to become more aware of internal as well as external environment of the body, of the moving body. Mm-hmm. So raising awareness and consciousness of both. So both of mm-hmm. the body, of the inside of the body, why the movements are taking place and how they're taking mm-hmm. place within a specific place.
Mm-hmm.
And also perhaps that would be a little bit about a different aspect. But when I was listening to you, one thought came up in my mind. With regard especially to the notion of bodily awareness, as it is very much connected to the Double Skin and Double Mind initiative, it also made me think about how the notion of empathy has been once understood. And I say it has been once understood because its understandings have been changing all the time since its very, very beginning, start in the 19th century. And empathy, to be honest, at the end of 19th century was very closely connected to aesthetic responses, so responses experienced during contact with art of various kinds. And for example, Vernon Lee, who was an English writer, she performed experiments during which she was observing her own body and how her own body reacted when she was looking at, for example, sculptures that captured movement. And she paid attention to, for example, her own breathing patterns, feelings of pressure and tension that turned out to be sensible and to become sensible when she paid attention to them on the basis of her aesthetic responses to the works of art of various kinds. And she pointed out that it was precisely thanks to empathy that she was able to form a bodily connection to aesthetic experiences and to art that she was looking at and that she was experiencing. And also, according to her, that also allowed her to enhance awareness of her own body. So in this context, empathy is very much a bodily practice involving one's whole body, as well as other senses, because it, of course, depends on what aesthetic experience one engages in. And I was wondering, do you think that the double skin, double mind can also be considered as an installation that in a way allows for experiences that can raise one's empathetic responses or can help one work with one's empathetic responses or can be considered as an instrument that can allow one for becoming more aware of one's own body and therefore more become more empathetically sensitive?
Yeah, I think yes. I don't know, this of course a very specific approach to dance and it's very explicitly, very deliberately focused on breaking through, you know, the barriers of you really have to go through effort and through exhaustion until you come out like ideally you're very vulnerable, like you know how to make your body available to speak language on stage. You have to open yourself up completely. Mm-hmm. So there is no way to hide, no way. So then a preparation of an instrument of the body is really to make yourself vulnerable. And then, of course, you're completely empathic. So that's almost a natural consequence. Like you open the body and you become extremely empathic for the sound, for the, it starts just with this abstract stage. So it's the sound, it's the quality of the light, you know, the smells of the costume, you become extremely sensitized. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you bring this out also to your co-dancers, of course. You share the mm-hmm. same space, the same struggles, the same, yes. And it's the same everywhere. So, it creates a vulnerable body or aims a strong and vulnerable body at the same time, double skin, double mind, the practice. So, the installation which tries to transmit this practice, yes, also like aims towards being to reproduce or to make it repeatable, this idea of, going through a dance practice that really allows you to really get in touch with yourself, but also the deeper layers of your moving being, the deeper layers. So not the surface, so under the skin, underneath the mm-hmm. skin, deep, the relation to the ground, the relation to the space around you. So, yeah. Definitely, but at the same time, so it's a preparation for choreographic work. Mm-hmm. And then the choreographic work may be very demanding. And then you cannot, you have to stand on your own legs. So you cannot over-empathize you have to collect yourself very strongly. You know, then it's also, you need to contain yourself. It's mm-hmm. both ways. So it's not only opening, but also being able to contain yourself, your boundaries. Otherwise, you don't have enough strength okay. to maintain your stamina.
So you cannot control your body anymore if you become overly empathetic towards your own environment. So perhaps that also depends on who the participants of the installation are, because you said that double skin, double mind was made not only for professional dancers, but also for anyone actually. And I was also wondering if we consider anyone who's not a professional dancer becoming part of the Double Skin, Double Mind workshop, do you think that for these participants, it would be possible to get something out of it? I mean, carrying away the gained experiences of the workshop to the daily routine, so becoming more empathetic, more emotional, or of course, you name it, as a result of the workshop, and being able to just carry it away and use it during one's daily routine experiences.
Yeah, of course, that's the... Yes, I do think so. That's the possible. That's the whole idea. I think there's no doubt about whether this dance experience, besides being a preparation for a choreographic experience as a professional dancer, it's also, you know, just to give another quality of life, or to enhance another clarity of perception by really, you know, going through this, that we do not have doubts about the benefits of that. So, but yeah, of course, you need to experience it and not too superficially. So you need to give yourself to it, and then it can give itself back to you. But you have to go through it, let's say, several times and on a deeper level. So it's more so on, you know, staying on top of it. Mm-hmm. So like with every training, you cannot just once do and then say, okay, my life is changed, right? So
yes,
you have to
keep
working on it and keep maintaining. So everything is closing again. You open the body, next day it's closed again. You open it, close even more. You know, it's like constant. And tuning, what we call tuning, like not too open, not too close. So it's, you know, in relation to yourself, to the other, to the space, to the sound. So it's inside, outside, double skin, double mind, also inner, outer perception, in dialogue, tuning.
Yeah, so it's always a matter of practice, isn't it?
And, it is.
Yeah, and also I was wondering, because I can see on the website of ICK that the Double Skin, Double Mind workshop is also offered in a form of online classes. Am I right? Are they still available? And of course, I suppose that it's all because of the pandemic reality that we are living in. And I was wondering, could you tell us a bit about that? Or are you involved in these online meetings?
Yeah, so these online, so these are the community classes that we have been offering for free so far. So that's, I think, twice a month.
Okay.
You just need to subscribe. And now, of course, it's a summer break. And I sometimes teach them, but we have a different, also sometimes the dancers of the company teach them or give them, or, you know, a certified teacher. So we're kind of a pool of teachers that would take care of it. And it was usually live, of course. And then because of Corona, it became an online thing. But there were, yeah, mixed feelings about it. So it is possible. I also gave a couple of online Double Skin, Double Mind workshops. It's workable. It's doable. But still, yeah. Yeah, it's also a reduction of the real experience, I think. But maybe also we're getting better and better. Also now we did the teacher training in hybrid, because the participants came from United States and United Kingdom. Okay. So we made a transatlantic teacher training, and we were convinced, no, we cannot do it only hybrid. But we had to, because they didn't see a chance with all the, you know, Corona situation, to fly in, and we didn't want to postpone, so we did it. But then we are use a big beamer and then a projection, and then, you know, with Zoom, and then we pin the people, and then you see, so you can still, you know, give corrections as well. But yeah, and they have to go through a physical experience by themselves, but you try to project yourself across the digital space, of course, to imagine. So you need, that is possible. You imagine being together. You imagine really, and of course, their empathy is highly, highly required. If you experience dance observers, is highly empathetic. Yeah, this, you attend to movement. It's pure empathy. You attend to movement. You watch somebody move. It's pure empathy. That's the basic. It's like the, otherwise there's no connection.
Exactly. So I suppose, especially right now, when some meetings are forced even to be organized online, then I think this notion of empathy becomes even
more important.
Exactly, even more important, right? Because we really need this connection, and we really need to perhaps even develop new ways of connecting with people, right? So
yeah,
I was also, when I was thinking about the online meetings that are hosted under the Double Skin, Double Mind workshop, I was also wondering, do you also see them as possibilities for self-reflection and thinking about empathetic reactions? Do you think it is still possible to develop them? I mean, of course, if they are organized twice a month, of course, there is a possibility. But do you think that they can be understood as very helpful nowadays, especially when the possibilities for interpersonal contacts are still quite limited?
Yeah, I think yes. I think yes. Of course, you think now from the perspective that's a research focus, right? We're like on empathy, on mm-hmm. that connection. Of course, it's one layer of it. So it's one layer. It's really the community and doing it together. But there's many other layers to it as well. So mm-hmm. But it's a bigger discussion around, you know, dance as an art form and the benefits of dance and possibilities to instrumentalize dance or the meanings of dance for society. So there is also for you, you know, you choose now this focus on empathy. So it's for us a basic, it's a given, like a, you know, like the canvas of a painting. It's just a departure point. You cannot even work without it. So for us, it's so van zelfsprekend, so normal, you know. But of course, you can pinpoint it and say, this is what I'm interested in. And can I, through this experience, you know, highlight it more? Or can I, of course. And that's also, you have dance therapy, or like mm-hmm. they really focus on the beneficial for the improving. But yeah, it depends again, the focus you take on it. But sure, you can say, I want to develop my empathetic capacities, and I will do it through following Double Skin, Double Mind classes. So that's a free choice. But I wouldn't say, yeah, okay, today try to be empathetic towards, like, that's somehow, it's a,
yes, of course,
not an artistic, it's not an artistic theme, let's say.
Yeah,
it's a basic, it's a, but then you, on top of that, you create all other kind of worlds and languages, articulations and stuff.
Yes, of course. Yeah, having a look at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid, Susan, that this was
we
my
talked
last...
much too much.
No, I really enjoyed talking to you, Susan. So, but anyways, I'm still afraid that this was my last question for you, unless you still have anything to add. No. Yeah, of course, if our listeners are interested, they are more than welcome to visit the website of ICK and familiarize themselves more with the Double Skin, Double Mind installation, as well as other projects, of course. And yes, Susan, thank you very much for this inspiring conversation. I am very happy to have been able to have you here and to have a talk with you.
Thank you very much, Justina. Lovely to meet you, and thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're very, very welcome. And also, of course, I would like to thank our listeners for being here. You have just listened to another podcast inspired by the Transmission in Motion seminar series, this time created with one and only Susan Tunka. Thank you.